Welcome to the Sportsman Drag Racing Legends podcast, brought to you by the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. I'm your host, Mike Delahanty, and I'll bring you stories and conversations with some of the true legends of stock, super stock, and modified sportsman drag racing. This podcast is sponsored by Race Tools Direct. Race Tools Direct was founded to be your choice for quality tools and products that have been carefully selected and thoroughly tested both at the track and the shop by racers for racers. To place an order, go to racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533. This is Season 1, Episode 2. In this episode, I'll talk with stock and super stock racer Rock Running and his wife Ginny from the state of Michigan. So what made Rock Running a winner? To start, location was key. Having his home located just 3 miles from Lapeer Dragway is what got Rock started. In the late 60s and early 70s, Rock ran weekly in one of the hotbeds of sportsman drag racing against some of the toughest stock and super stock drivers in the country at tracks like Tri-City, Central Michigan, US 131, and Milan Dragway. Those weekly programs prep Rock for the type of racing he would face when he started to travel the NHRA circuit in the mid-1970s. Help and inspiration from the right people also played a part. Al Provost was a savvy and winning veteran that would become Rock's mentor and share with him many of the tricks and tactics that would later mold him into a winner. But I think it's his supportive wife and racing partner, Ginny, that made Rock a winner and become one of the legends of stock and super stock racing. Ginny played an important part in Rock's success and is proud of the fact that she's never missed a race. The Runnings are a racing family with everybody involved, including grandson Zach, a sharp racer like his grandfather. Rock and Ginny are truly a team, and it's no surprise when fellow racers speak of Rock. It usually comes out as Rock and Ginny. Rock got his start with his daily driver 421 four-speed Catalina at Ubley Dragway in 1963. Rock made the move to a dedicated full-time race car when he converted another daily driver, a 66 Catalina, into a J-stock automatic car in the late 60s that he ran locally in Michigan. The move to a 70.5 Firebird Superstocker didn't produce anything of merit. But that changed in 1974 when Rock built a GTO Stocker. That was the car that gave Rock his first win at the Division III WCS race at Tri-City Dragway. From that point forward, Rock and Ginny were believers that they had what it takes to be winners on a bigger scale. And over the next four decades, Rock and Ginny compiled an impressive string of victories that include 5 national event wins and 3 runner-ups at big races, the World Finals, Indy, and Gainesville. 17 divisional points race wins, back-to-back Division III Superstock Championships in 1989 and 1990, and Rock finished second in Division III Superstock points 5 times. Rock was also a 2-time winner of the prestigious popular hot rodding race at US 131. And finally, Rock was inducted into the Michigan Motorsports Hall of Fame. In early February, I sat down with Rock and Ginny at their home in Lapeer, Michigan, just 3 miles from the new Lapeer Dragway. So anyway, one of the best places to start is how you got hooked. What got you hooked? What was the bug that got you going on racing?
A friend of mine wanted to go up to Ubley back in 1963. Mm-hmm. And we went up and watched a couple of times.
Right.
And I thought, at the time I had a 63 Pontiac 421, 4-speed.
So a pretty hot piece.
Yeah. And I thought, boy, I bet that'd be fun, So we went up for 4 or 5 times in 63 and probably half a dozen, maybe more than that, in 64.
Okay. And a little street racing in between?
Nope.
No street race. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
No street race.
We were having kids.
Ah, okay. Yeah. All right.
So anyway, it got to where, you know, I'd come home Sunday night and I'd have to work all night on the car to get it because it was, by that time, it was starting to get older, you know, so parts were breaking.
Yeah.
So I could go back to work.
As your daily driver, right?
I was driving that to work every day.
Okay.
So we quit. And then they opened Lapeer Dragway
in 68. How far is Lapeer from here?
3 miles.
3 miles.
Oh, that's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can hear them for years. You can hear them.
Okay.
And we had to go over and see what it was like, you know, and then all over again, you know. But this time I decided there's no way I'm going to race the car that I drive on the street.
Right.
So we had a 66 Catalina that was driving, and it was ready to trade for a new car. Well, we got the new car, but we kept the Pontiac and raced that.
Okay. All right. So what was the new car? So you raced the Catalina, right?
I raced the Catalina, and I bought a 69 Grand Prix.
Okay. Was that your tow car then?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. So what motor was in the Catalina?
389.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. It was just a standard car. It had a 4-barrel on it, of course.
Right. Sticker auto?
Automatic.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
All right. And start off in pure stock, or what did you, run stock?
Yeah, I think that's all I had back then. Just stock. That's all I had.
Okay. All right.
Back then.
So just to stop for a minute, what got you hooked on Pontiac? Because you've been a Pontiac guy, or at least a Pontiac guy for a long time.
I just liked the cars.
That was the first car I bought.
Okay.
That 63, we got married in 62, and 63, that was the first new car I bought. That 63 Catalina.
Okay.
But that was the horse, you know, the...
The muscle car?
That appealed to me, so...
Okay. So you're racing it Lapeer.
Yep.
With the 66.
Yep. The 66. I raced that until 70... sometime in 71... or early 72.
Okay.
And a place, a speed shop down in Oxford called Champion Automotive.
Yeah, okay.
They had a Firebird they were racing, a brand new 70 and a half, brand new. And they raced it for the rest of that year, 71, and they wanted to sell it. And he asked me if I wanted to buy it, and I said, I couldn't afford that, you know, brand new car.
Right.
He says, what if we sold it to you for $2,000? Race ready, brand new car.
Turnkey.
Okay.
Because they wanted to see it go to somebody that would race it.
Right, right, okay.
And take care of it.
Yep.
And I had been, they did me an engine for my 66.
Okay.
So then we bought that.
Now, is that the car that Russ Abrams has now?
Yep.
Okay, all right. So that was a 455...
That was a 400 Ram Air 4.
Okay, 400 Ram Air 4. Okay, all right.
Yep.
And that was a stocker or super stocker, as you remember?
I started out in stock in 62. I forget where it was, but sometime between then and 64, NHRA says there's no more stock.
Right, okay.
Remember that?
Right, so that
And
was...
they forced me to go to super stock.
Right, okay. So is that when you put a big tire under it then?
Yep.
So yeah. when did the T-37 then cut? So that was after the Firebird, right?
I got the 74 GTO.
Okay.
And the shaker because
I couldn't compete in super. I mean, I didn't have the money.
Right.
To turn the Firebird into a super stocker at that time. I raced it a few times in super stock, but I wasn't. And so I says, I sold it. And went to the 74.
Okay, okay. The GTO or the Ventura, right.
So they had a 4-speed in it.
Yeah.
And a crash box.
Right, right. So those turned out, those cars really were really competitive cars. There was a bunch of them all over the country.
There were.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what tipped you off to that car? Or?
The horsepower rating.
Okay. All right.
Until we got it.
Three.
It was bad.
And, yeah. 350 and was only rated at 220 horse okay. at that time.
Okay. Those were killer cars back in the day.
We didn't get it done. They wouldn't come out with the specs until the middle of the summer on that car, though.
Until 74 and a half.
Okay. All right. So. Now, is that the car you really start first traveling around and chasing points meets
I went up to a few with the Firebird, but like I said, I wasn't competitive, so I didn't really go very much.
Okay. Well, back then, you had to run off of...
The record, right?
The records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was hard when we didn't have a competitive
car. I wasn't even close. You know, I was more than a half a second, probably three quarters of a second off the national record. You know?
Okay.
But then that 74 come along, and that's what I was going to say for my first big win. You know, I hadn't won anything, especially NHRA,
right.
before that.
Okay.
You know? And I got that car in about 2 months after I started racing it. They had the Tri-City Points race.
Right.
And that was huge
right.
back then. I mean, that was huge.
Right. I've seen there's a bunch of pictures online lately, and it's amazing the cars that they were there. Yeah.
And so
Ed Powderpuffs.
Yep. So that year we took the 74 up there, and it just, well, I set the record to begin with. And I was run it all out and set the record.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the weather held, and that's all I did all day long. I mean, I just drove it through, you know.
He won.
And I won it. And that, like I said, that I'll never forget that one.
So is that the one that kind of like, hey, we've got something here, and I can do something with this kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
We are hooked.
And that's when I knew that I could compete with them, you know, them guys.
Yeah, because back in that time frame, I mean, the stockers and super stockers in this area were just dynamite.
Yeah.
We had Paul McCure and Tiganelli's, and I mean, it was like the who's who of old super stock and stock. It was tons of people.
Yeah, the weekly program was just, it was like running a points race
and
today.
And Al Provost was already in the NHRA circuit, and we've known them for about 100 years.
He kind of kept me going. I mean, really kind of got me going around to the points races and stuff, because I probably wouldn't have, but...
Al kind of showed you the
way. Yeah, he'd come over, you know, and would talk racing, and man, it'd get me all pumped up.
He only lived over in Otisville, which is about 15 minutes.
So he was...
He was terrible.
He was your enabler, right?
Yeah.
Yes. But he also got us a crash box, right?
Yeah. And I picked up like a half a second putting that in over the stock one, and they had that Saginaw.
Yeah,
if you ever heard about them.
Oh. Yeah.
Them Saginaws were terrible.
Yeah. So what was it? Was it O-Stock? O-Stock car?
Yep.
Okay. I think I remember seeing that. 75 Summer Nationals, I think you may have come out there. Yeah, I remember seeing the car there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, were you on the motor wheel deal as well with that car?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I think you were in some of the ads too, weren't you?
Yes. Yep. Calendars. We were.
Yeah.
We did a couple of TV spots with Steve Evans.
And I was in I forget where they put the write-up, but I got the most points. So the Oldsmobile or Pontiac was like number three in points,
right.
And I got the most points.
You were the top
because
runner.
I won the Tri-City Points race.
Okay, all right. Okay.
It was a brand new car.
Yeah.
So that's what you had to have.
Yeah,
was a brand
new
car.
Yeah, right. That current model year, right, for the Manufacturer's Cup.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how many years did you spend with the GTO before? The GTO, then the T37?
Yep. 74, excuse me, 74. And right at the end of 74, they decided that I needed more horsepower. 30 horse. That was a killer back then, you know, because you were running off the records.
Right, right.
Well, you know, I mean, I set the record down as far as I could set it, you know, and then all of a sudden, 30 horse.
Well, I remember back east, you know, at Cecil County, Maple Grove, Race Beast, Jack Mattias.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of those cars, and they were Alvanis. Yeah, they were killer cars, killer cars. So, yeah.
Then Dave Pruden decided he wanted to buy it.
So. Okay, so Dave ended up with the car.
We said, here you go.
Yeah.
All right, so what took you to the T-37?
I kind of liked the 455 HO. It looked really good to me. It had a decent horsepower rating.
Right.
And I was talking to a guy that I knew that would talk to us every once in a while at the track. And he worked at Pontiac.
Okay.
And I asked him if he knew anybody that might have a 455 that they'd sell. And he says, yeah, me. And he had bought one to race, and he decided he couldn't race it.
Okay.
So he sold it to me. I got a pretty good deal on that, too. But that was almost an ideal race car because they had hardly any sound deadener in it. There
right.
was no air conditioning, no power of any kind, no power steering, no power brakes,
right.
no nothing. So
that was like basically the purpose-built race car, no options. Bench
seat. It really didn't take much because I made a stocker out of it, of course.
Right.
And it didn't really take a whole lot.
So that car carried you from, let's just stop for a second. Where is that car now? Who's got that now? Didn't Kenny Schauber have it for a while?
His name?
Kenny Schauber had it. And
Bob Howell.
Bob Howell, right.
He had it. And then I can't remember that guy's name. It's got it. I can't remember.
But it's
been racing the last couple of years.
Yeah,
it's been racing.
Yeah. Right.
It's bright red.
I think when Bob Howe, did he paint it red?
Yes. Red.
Okay.
Yep. And, I don't know if he's racing.
Yeah, that guy that did carburetors, I can't remember his name. He had it for a while.
Oh, Danny Ashley.
Yeah, he had it for a while, and he did a lot of work on it.
Okay.
He really fixed it up really nice.
Yeah, Danny's he's very meticulous.
Then he ended up selling it to this guy that's got it now.
All right. So if you can remember, how long? So you went T-37. You had a really good run in stock with that car. That car was good to you, wasn't it?
From 75 until 82. Yeah, that was a good car. That was a really good car.
And then Oldsmobile.
Yep, Oldsmobile asked me if I wanted to race a new car. What are you going to do?
No, thank you.
The Oldsmobile program was pretty good.
Yeah.
We went over there and we ended up getting three Oldsmobiles, but we went over there and got in the bowling alley parking lot.
Yeah.
Got surrounded by cops.
They thought it looked awful suspicious.
When you picked the cars up?
Yeah. They wouldn't let us into the...
Yeah, you couldn't go to the factory and pick it up. So we had to meet them out in somewhere out. Outside.
Right, in neutral, clean territory, outside the gate, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yep, I understand.
Yeah, he had to do a lot. That was Tom Erb at the time, but he had to do a lot of fast talking. I mean, there was nothing illegal about it, but it just
didn't look too good.
So now, let's see. Today you've got an Achieva, right?
Achieva.
Did you start with a Calais or did you start with an Achieva?
I started with a Calais. Right,
so you started with a Calais, and... was that a car you built, or was that an FJ car that you had built?
Both the Calais and the Achieva are both FJ cars.
Okay, all right.
The only one I built was the Cutlass.
So did you start first with the Cutlass?
Yes.
Okay.
That's 83.
All right. You had one of the first...
Super Stockers.
Right.
I was one of the first Super Stockers out with one of those cars.
Right. And with the 307, right?
Yep.
That was new territory to with the 307, wasn't it?
Oh, geez. That about drove me up the wall. There was a joke about every time I pulled into the pit spot, up on jack stands.
And not for the transmission either.
No.
Nope.
Everything else.
So you pretty much pioneered that engine, really.
For
Oldsmobile. Yeah, okay. In Super Stock Barn, which was tough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then we had...
And the funny part of it was... The car would just barely run index. And we went to the Sports Nationals. It was 83. Must have been stolen 83 when the first year I came out with it.
Yeah.
Went to the Sports Nationals. And I just run all out to just to run the index. So that's what I dialed was the index, ran all out, and I ended up winning the race.
When it's your day, right?
Yeah. And I didn't even qualify.
It
I had to get
alternate.
In as an alternate.
Really?
Yeah, I got in as an alternate. Ended up winning a race.
That's great. That's a great story. That's a great story. Yeah, dialing the index and winning the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great story. So how long did you stick with the 307? Because eventually you put a 403 in the car, right?
Yep. Let's see. Somewhere around 86.
Okay. All right.
I think I changed to the 403.
Okay.
And then I raced it that way until I got the Calais.
Calais, right.
And let Randy drive the Cullis.
Okay.
Randy drove it after that for quite a while. And I think at some point he switched back to the 307.
Okay, so because you the 403, it was a GT car, right?
Then we put the 403 in the other two.
So you always stuck with the olds or, well, first Pontiac.
Yeah.
Ever any thoughts to, when you were running GT, just to put a Chevy in it?
Well, I guess I was afraid that I couldn't make a Chevy competitive because they were so...
Hit.
There's so many guys had worked on them and worked on them and worked on them, and me jump into it and think I could run with them, you know? I mean, I just didn't think I could.
Okay. So were you doing your old Oldsmobile motors, or was Greg helping you at
this
time?
I didn't mind. Well... Tri-City Competition I started out. He did all my stuff until he moved.
Right, okay. Cool. So he
does his own assembly and everything.
Yeah. Right, so Greg did all your machine work.
Yeah, he just did my machine work.
Okay, all right. So the move to the Achieva. So that was a big step up to a smaller car, quicker car, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And FJ did all the chassis work on that. And then did you have to finish the car?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to put a lot of the stuff on. Yeah.
Right. It was...
The interior and all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
No, he did all
he,
that.
He tapped it?
Yeah.
The FJ program was a pretty good deal with Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
And he did a nice job.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
So, well, in fact, they're swapping this year.
Right. So granddad gets back the Cutlass, right?
Yeah, with the 403.
Grandson gets the fast car
What's he got, a 4 something? What engines he got putting in it?
He's putting in it a fuel injected.
It's an LS motor, right?
Yeah.
Like the new Coco type motor or new GM motor. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I figured that you know, the Achieva would be the better car to put it in. I don't really want to go that fast.
Okay.
Not at my age.
So you're going to go back to the Cutlass with a 307 or 403?
403.
Okay. All right. So a GT car.
He's not going that slow.
Yeah. I got the 307 on the back burner yet. So, I mean, it's sitting down there, but I'm going to start out with a 403.
Okay. All right. Just in case, right?
Yeah. And we had Mike Vestelny helping us do the changing. We had the chassis certified last fall so it could go in the 9s.
So you ever guesstimate how many runs that Cutlass has down the track?
Oh, gee, no. I couldn't even guess.
Thousands, right?
Yeah.
That's got
a lot.
Well, I was just thinking about it on the way up here, thinking, okay, that's an 82, right?
Yep.
So that's what, a 30-plus year-old car, right?
Yeah.
I think, what's it, 20? Yeah. And it doesn't seem like they're that old anymore,
mm-hmm.
Does it?
No, they don't.
And I mean, it's always been off the street, so it's in immaculate condition.
Right.
We've had some just stuff done to freshen it up to make it look good, but it looks really good. Zach was always proud of it. I mean, he did really well.
Yeah.
And with it, and it just... It's kind of dependable,
right.
You know. It's just like
I
can get an old blue and wiggle, but it's fun. I like it with a 403 in it because it comes up a little higher and it carries it.
Right,
you know?
It's just a little quicker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Zach's always leaving first, right?
Yeah. So he'll be running supposedly like 940s.
That sounds about right.
950s, 940s. Yeah. Depending on bracket mode.
Right.
Yeah. He's in bracket mode or not. Yeah.
So where did the name Super Sleeper come from?
Kids.
Your kids?
Mm-hmm. They started, when they were little. That was way back in the Pontiac, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Way back.
Right.
The green car, 66.
Is that where it started? Okay.
Back then, there was a lot of things going around that were sleepers. You know, this,
on the street?
Or sleepers, that,
yeah.
You know. And was it Rena Rand? We're talking together. Oh, they call it the Super Sleeper. Okay.
Well, it fit. You know, I mean, the big old Catalina.
Yeah.
You know, and it fit.
All right, so your biggest win was probably, was it the Tri-City Points meet that really, like, gotcha?
Yep.
How about
that's the one that kind of cemented it.
Yeah, how about national event wins?
The first one was 81. I won with the Pontiac. It was the first national event I won. 81 Spring Nationals.
Okay. In Columbus?
Yep.
Okay.
That was, I always remember that one because that was, yeah, that was big.
One Sports Nationals, one Dallas, yeah, Topeka, Columbus.
Dallas.
That's a pretty good, yep. Pretty good collection.
Yeah, it was.
And division champ in 89 and 90. 2 years in a row, and then that's it.
Okay.
Back-to-back wins, and then that was it.
You were runner-up in the division, I don't know how many times.
Oh, yeah. Back when I had the Pontiac in the first 2 years of the Cutlass, I think there's probably about three times that I tied for a division championship, but I always started the year down south. And so some of my points were from down south.
Okay,
and
division.
Then they counted the most points you have within the division.
If
it was a tie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always lost because of that.
Oh, tough.
Yeah. We used to have the biggest rivalry with Dick Baker. We loved him. And, I mean, he beat Rockout because he had more in division than we had. Yeah. And it was, he came up and gave us a hug. I'm so sorry I won. He was so cute.
So, what was it, the way you raced? What the way you ran your car, or the way you dialed the car, or the way you made the wind light come on? What was it that you think that you had or worked for you was your success story? Dialing hard, being consistent, finish line, starting line. What do you think?
Probably being consistent and having her books on hand so that I could look and see what the other guy that I was coming up with to race, I could look and see what he was going. And I'd know if he was dialing funny or if he was trying to pull anything. Or.
So, I mean, that's the segue into the books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll just add this, in, you know, for the people listening that don't know Ginny running, I first remember Ginny as always walking to the staging lanes before we ran, sitting in the grandstands with notebooks, diligently taking notes, and always the go-to person to figure out who did what, when, and how quick.
Now, how many people would come up in the bleachers? I don't know if you'll tell me this, but I really need to know who, what, so-and-so ran. It was free.
Open book.
Oh, sure.
So how did you ever come up with this? The idea of... Was someone else doing it and you saw it, or was it something that you guys came up with on your own?
I just started writing down what we ran. And I thought, well, you know, that's not helping a lot, just what we ran. So then I would write down what everybody ran for Superstar, every round.
Right.
And I'd write down the temperature and write down everything. And then if, you know, when we got up there to run, then Rock would dial what we thought we should run.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they were way off, then we'd look at it again. But it worked out.
A lot of times you could pretty much tell if a guy was going to run what he dialed, just, you know, because I could look back and see what he'd been running. And he's not going to be able to run that, you know. So.
And you could probably look, too, if he ran, let's say, a 11:20, and he's just dialed 11:30, he's holding, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. you know what he's going to do at the other end, right?
Right. Yeah. But we had, I mean, I had people, when we ran stock and I was writing my books, I had people who ran super stock and said, would you keep an eye on so-and-so and so-and-so? So I would write them off on the corner.
Right.
And then when everything got done for the day, they'd come back and say, you know, what did so-and-so run?
So there was a group of you. There was you and there was Bev Provost.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Sally Sylvia?
Sally Sylvia.
Who was there others?
Elaine Nowicki.
Yep, okay.
Elaine. We got to know each other so well. And if one of them was late, I mean, we'd write an extra page so they would have, because everybody had books. And you didn't want them to miss out. But, I mean, they were all so nice. And if our kids came up or their kids came up or whatever, I mean, they all just dove right in. Just, it was a really nice group.
All right. So open up one of these books. I want you to read off some of the names. This is from 1974. So just in this. So what track is this?
English Town.
Oh, this is good. Okay. Read some names there.
Let's see. Don McElroy. Let's see. Gary Long. I can't remember Hunter's first name. I don't have his first name. Tom Trudeau.
Okay.
Jack Matthias. Dave Marvosh.
A lot of Division III guys there. That's yeah. a lot of local guys.
Yeah.
Now, did you also capture eliminations as well?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Read some of the eliminations. Do you have some eliminations?
This is still Sunday English time trial. Oh, let's see. English, wow. Tom Terrell, Yoder, Hinkle, Hunter Matthias, Paul Mayo. I forgot about Paul Mayo.
Yeah, Paul Mayo, yeah.
Yeah. Gary Long, Gary Doolittle, McElroy, Tony Goodwin, Kenny Coons. Baker. Oh my gosh. Kind of like.
That's all.
And you know, people that are listening to this, you can't see this, but these notebooks are, they look like something from out of history. They're a bit dog-eared. Their pages are discolored on the edges. But all the writing is this beautiful cursive, very clean, very neat. You know, someday you have to
put them in the archives.
Well, you know what? You need to find a student that could transcribe all these. And, you know, this is long before Nitro Joe's stats. That, you know?
Guilford, Doolittle, McElroy, Joe Poteet, Gary Long, Dave Pruden, Al Provost.
And what track is that?
I think this is Tri-City.
Yeah, that sounds local.
Yeah.
So that's just a weekly program, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it looked like Terry Nagel. There's just the people who ran up to Tri-City back when we ran were really awesome racers. And it was the who's who of, and a lot of them are still around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you're right. So it's interesting. So not only did you have the division races and national events, but you had the weekly racing too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we always thought that back when Rock was doing so well, we never missed a weekend. It didn't matter if we had a national meet or a points race or nothing. We went racing. And I think it was the repetition and the practice.
The seat time, right, Rock?
Yeah, seat time. Yeah. The number of hits on the tree, you know.
Yeah. All right, here, you got one from 78. Open that one.
78.
Who you got in there, Rock? Read off.
You want to look at it? Yeah. I haven't got my glasses on.
Okay, yeah, let me see if we might have to turn this over to Ginny because I don't have my glasses either.
Dick Griffin.
You know, the penmanship on this is just perfect. So let's see. Hollick, Johnson, McElroy, McKinney, Blankenship, Carl, King, Cook, Rock right at the top of the list. And then you have eliminations. With all the dial-ins, who won? Yeah, this is some great stuff. Here, you read some of these names here. I think you've got your glasses on. You can read these. So yeah. What's second round? What race is that that you're at? Second round?
This is Cincinnati.
Points race.
Yes.
Okay.
George
1978, is that when that is? Is that 78?
Yep.
78, Cincinnati points race.
Yep. George Williams, Mike McKenney, Roy McKenney, J.B. Stevenson, Kenny Hutchinson, Rock, Pam
Sanders.
Yes.
All right.
Forgotten that she did.
Yeah.
Cammers.
Yeah.
Blankenship.
Yeah.
McElroy, Cook, Smith.
Did Rock win?
Yes.
Okay. Rock went on to the third round, right?
Rock went on to the third round.
Okay.
He went on to fourth round. Let's see. Oh, they both broke out. He raced Kenny Hutchinson. They both broke out. Rock won.
Okay. So he's into the fifth round.
Oh, man. He lost in the fifth round. He raced Blankenship.
Okay.
And
So Blankenship had that B stock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was really
he was good. He was good.
He was
well,
good.
He dialed a 43 and went a 44.
Pretty good for a stick car back when they weren't prepping the track, right?
Mm-hmm. You dialed a 5 and went a 4.
Yeah.
That's good racing.
Yeah, it is. It was good.
Good racing.
John Ulray, Marianne Method, Ron Zello, Dick Baker.
Yeah. That year is another one of my memorable ones because I won enough points that year. And back then, they took the top 5 from each division and paid their way to go to the world finals.
Right.
California.
And whoever won the world finals was the world champion.
Right.
I got all the way to the final. Red-lighted.
Oh.
By, I think it was like 2 or 3 thousandths of a second.
All right, so the question I was going to ask you, what was your toughest loss? Was that it?
That was it. That was it.
World
Could have been the world champion. That was tough. That was hard to take.
It made for a long ride home, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that the year that we towed Bevanel?
No, that was for the Winter Nationals.
All
right,
Nationals.
So let's go to that. The infamous towing story. All right, who's going to tell it? Or I guess go ahead, guys. I'm going to sit back and listen.
Well, first of all, we were out there for a whole month because of rainouts. The thing got rained out twice while we was out there, but we kept staying.
Right.
Because we could come so far.
Yeah.
So we finally got the race in. I think I lost like second or third round, but still. We were on our way home, so we was going to travel with Bevanel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
what kind of tow rigs and motorhomes were you using at that time?
I had a 76 mini motorhome. It was like a 21 foot.
Okay, with the so it's like a van up front.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Class C, right?
Right.
Yep. Okay.
And I had an open trailer. I had my Pontiac on the back with an open trailer.
All right.
And I don't know why I was leading. Normally, Al
had a class.
Didn't
A.
he have one of those GMC motorhomes?
Not at that time. He still had that old Ford.
Okay.
It was a Ford front end with an Oldsmobile engine in it.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a truck.
Yep.
All it was like the hood.
Okay.
Remember?
Yes.
It was just the hood sticking out.
Now, did he drop that Olds motor in, or was it that the way it came?
He did it. No, he did it himself.
Okay. All right.
And anyway, that's what was in it. And we just wanted to get home because we'd been gone a month.
Right.
And I was leaving and was going through the mountains, going into Arizona,
mm-hmm.
just crossing the border out of Texas into Arizona.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I'll come on the CB and says, "I got smoke." And I look back and that's all you could see out of the back of that thing was smoke. And so I pulled off the side of the road and he kind of pulled up. He coasted up behind me.
Okay.
And he said, the engine's shot, you know. So we looked around and just a little bit down was on the... Actually, we just broke over the hill.
Okay.
So just a little bit down the hill, there was a gravel pit.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it overnight. Do you think I can pull you down there? And he says, well, we ain't got any other choice. We can't stay out here. So he hooked this motorhome on the back of my trailer.
Okay.
We waited until it was completely clear, and I pulled him down, and we went down into that gravel pit.
Okay.
Well, Bev had a broken arm at this all the time we were gone, too.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So he started tearing into it, pulled the head off, and he knew which cylinder it was. And all he got down in there, and then what had happened, he broke a valve off.
Okay, yeah.
And that valve just shattered that piston. There was nothing left. The piston was gone.
Okay.
And the wrist pin, of course, it just chewed up the cylinder walls.
Right.
And so he was shaking his head. He didn't know what he was going to do. And
a little far from home.
So I says, well, maybe we could clean it up enough to, you know.
Throw a piston in it?
Put a piston in it. And
right.
And he says, all the grooves in the wall, he said, it'll never seal. And I says, we don't care. As long as you plug that hole up, that's the main thing.
Right, right.
And he thought about it for a minute. And he said, yeah, you're right. But we had to find some way of getting so the rings wouldn't grab on, you know, all that. So we took a rat tail file.
Yeah.
Went down in there and filed off all of them high spots,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he put one ring on a piston, you know, and stuck it. Well, we had to go and buy one. He found a place.
There was a little hole in the wall place.
Machine shop.
Machine shop had old pistons, a barrel full of old pistons.
Yeah. He reached down in there and he says, that looks like a 403 right there. And it was. So anyway, we went back and he put a ring on there and stuck it down in there and, no, not yet. So he'd do a little more file. No, not yet. He'd file some more.
All this bending over the fender of the truck, right?
Yeah. Pretty soon he got it so the ring would, the piston would slide up and down there with that ring on it. We put it together. And
it only took us, from the time he blew it to the time we were back on the road, it's 2 days.
Pretty handy.
Luckily for that little old hole in the wall machine shop that they let the guys go through the barrel, and they didn't care what they did.
So anyway, he went to start it up and didn't want to start right away because, I mean, he had antifreeze and who knows what oil and
all
through the engine.
Yep,
you know?
Right.
But he kept cranking on it. Well, it finally started. Oh, man, did that thing smoke for a while. Had to blow that all out of there and burn it out, you know.
And he made it home.
He started on the way home, just keeping his fingers crossed. And he not only made it all the way home, but he used it for the rest of that year. And then
he sold it.
And a guy put it in
the
car.
And never went through the motor again?
Nope. The guy put it in his car, and he drove it for quite a few years that way.
Oh, man, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. But, yeah, that was quite a story.
And we couldn't leave him stranded. I mean,
no.
You just can't. We've already been gone a month. What the heck?
Yeah, what's another couple of days, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, the people in the gravel pit were really nice. They didn't care. We were in their way, but it was just nice.
So thinking about this, when either back in, when you were, you know, really hitting it good or even today, Who was the guy that you didn't want to see in the other lane? Was there anybody like that just like...
You're talking locally, it was Jim Edlin.
Okay.
Seemed like every time I come up against Jim Edlin, he'd beat me.
He's good. He bracket raced for a long time after he got rid of the stocker, right?
He did.
Yeah.
I mean, we were good friends. It's just that we didn't want to race him.
So he had a Plymouth wagon, old like a used mm-hmm. stock. Yeah, so yes. it was a slower car, right?
Yep.
Okay. Was it just that he was? It was the handicap.
Most of the time when I'd race him, it would be over to Central.
Yep.
Okay, and that's his track.
Okay.
And he knew that place.
Okay. All right.
He was good.
Yeah,
he was good.
All right. So I want to get some comments on some of these guys. So Ben Wenzel.
Oh.
Yeah.
We've been friends with Benny for...
He's a really good guy. Yeah. Never thought I'd raced him very much, have I?
No, not really.
I can't remember because he kind of
Well, it, with him being in stock.
Well, he was in stock and I was in super stock.
Okay, all right.
So we never really, you know.
The only time we come up against him now is a stock, super stock race.
Okay, all right.
And he's good. He still loves it just like a user. And Dave.
They're still good. I, you know. Seeing guys like that giving me inspiration that there's still lots of good years left.
Yeah. Well, how old are you?
65.
Okay. We're 77, 78. Mm-hmm. So Benny's right around our age. And Dave, I think Dave's a year or so older.
Okay.
But Dave still has, and Benny does too, but Dave, he can't let loose of the love of it. You know, I think he tried to stay home one race or something.
Yeah,
it
one.
Killed him. It just, you know, it just, and we were into court with the Lapeer Dragway a couple of weeks ago, and I had to testify. And the opposing people were saying, you know, how often do you go racing? And I said, whenever Rock or my son or my grandson goes out of the yard, I'm gone. I have never missed a race. And all in 50 some years. And he didn't believe me. He just, to me, it's normal that I go.
Is it, I think so much of it is a social aspect. Is that part of it?
It's part of it, yeah. Because Elaine and Sally and I were friends for 30 years or more.
Yeah.
I mean, every race we went to. And then, I mean, it was just, you know, how are you? How are the kids? Or mm-hmm. how are you feeling now that you've got this or whatever? You know, I right. mean, it was like, that was part of it.
It's your racing family.
Yes, yeah. yes.
Back when like in the 70s?
Yep.
I don't know if you, did you race back then?
Late 70s, here.
Okay, do you remember when you used to They didn't have
sessions, and we
so
yeah. lanes all day.
So you'd make a run, and you'd come right back and get in line.
Yes,
because otherwise you wouldn't get any more runs.
That's right. We sat in line forever,
and
didn't we?
Thing is, they never knew when we were coming out. They spent the whole day up there in the bleachers because they never knew when we were coming out.
Yeah.
And we'd go to the restroom at different times so that if somebody was there to make sure that you wrote down.
You tag off.
Yeah. But it was just, you know, I mean, what we said. And then there was times when, like if you go to the U.S. Nationals, you had to wait outside the gate. And if you were the first 10 cars of stock, first 10 cars of super stock, you got a freebie.
Yeah.
So we would be there and we would run and get Judy McCormick's car. Because they never could get there early enough so that she would get a freebie.
Okay.
So
it was no punches, right? Remember? No punches. For,
yeah.
Right. How about Bortman?
Oh, we're still friends.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in terms of a racer.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, he was actually the one that made me give up on my Pontiac because he came into my class with that. He had that Charger, whatever they called it back then.
Okay, yep.
And I was running J Automatic, and
oh, yeah.
he came into J Automatic. And
that was 1970.
I threw up my hands like, no way.
He was pretty sharp?
Oh, he was good.
He's tough. He was tough back then. He won a lot.
He was good.
It was bad enough if you weren't in this class, but if you were in his class, you might just forget it.
You can't do it.
So when he had it, before he had the 59 Chevy mm-hmm. that he won the world championship with, yeah. was he, I mean, did he come over to Tri-City and was he tough locally?
Yeah.
Way back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once I finally got a car that ran good, then he had already retired.
So when you were finally ready for him, he was gone, right?
Yeah. And then he didn't race for a long time.
Yeah.
So, this is a question. I mean, I talk about this with a lot of our peer group, you know, that's older than younger. What do you do when the day comes when it's like you can't go anymore or you can't do it?
Going anyway. We've talked about it. Yeah. We want to go and watch Zach.
Yeah, as long as we can get in the motorhome and we can go and watch Zach.
We're
going to go.
Good enough.
Well, and we can crew.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, he respects Grandpa's brain. And there's a lot of things that he'll come upstairs and say, he's still got it. So, you know, it's something like that. But Zach is a good racer. And he can hardly wait till that engine's ready in the Chiva. And luckily, the Lapeer Dragway's good. So we can just go over there
and test.
Because we were over there quite a few times last summer.
Mm-hmm. Traction's good. The timing equipment is really good.
Is it?
Yeah. I run the same there that I do anywhere else. So that makes it nice if you're testing, you know.
Especially 3 miles away. Back when you were running the T37 and some of the super stock stuff, did you do much testing?
Yeah.
Well, not a lot, because there was a race every weekend.
No, but remember when we got there? Was it the Cullis? What was it? We went over there, okay. And poor Jim and Mary Jo.
Oh, yeah.
They just unlock the gate and say the timing equipment's already turned on. Go ahead. You run the clocks. He'll race. Yeah. We'd leave and they'd
I always work second shift, so we'd go over in the morning and they'd let us rent the track real cheap.
Okay.
Like dirt cheap. They were so good about that. But, I mean, we went sometimes, twice a week when we were there testing.
Trying to figure the car out?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It was like, if we don't hurry up and get this figured out, we're going to blow it up or do something to it. It was, when we got it finally figured out, it was awesome. But
Getting there.
It was.
Yeah.
It was rough. But nobody had run that in Superstock, so.
Yeah, you didn't have anybody you could go to.
And there weren't any parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The valve train was kind of shaky.
Yeah, I had to come up with the whole deal myself. That them heads were, it was really hard to come up with a way to fasten for the rocker arms, you know, because them heads were so flimsy.
Right, and a little, 5/16 bolt to hold the rocker stud or the, mm-hmm. the rockers in place, yeah.
Yeah, I finally come up with that, putting that plate down in there and then... That solved the whole thing, but it took me a while to come up with that.
The girdle. He won like 17 points races.
Okay.
Without cheap, of course. But so.
Right. So back in the day, Al was, even till he stopped, a very tough racer.
Yes.
Al Provost.
Yeah. Was.
So I remember the car, the Blue Tick 2, which is 59 Chevy.
Yep.
Yep.
So that was... Now, did he ever come down and run Lapeer with you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He raced Lapeer.
Oh, he ran Lapeer Dragway all the time.
And he was tough then?
Yeah. And the thing is, we had a few friends like Al who came over there. We had... It was more fun than anything because we just had a good time.
Okay. So now, did Al have a connection at Oldsmobile that helped him mm-hmm. out with cars?
He was one of the... First ones to do that around here.
Okay, because he had a 7442, I think he had one of those.
Right.
And then that he had an Omega.
Yes.
And on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
He had that wagon, that maroon wagon there for a while.
Right.
But we've had so many good friends over the years that have, you know, just, we've known Paul McCure for... like 100 years. And his buddy, Tom Steele, is going to do the headers for Zach's engine when he gets the engine in and gets it all ready. So, you know, you just keep cycling. And so.
A really good friends network, right? That helps everybody. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know. And, so it's just, I mean, everybody's interwoven around and mm-hmm. stuff, and it's nice.
Ginny says it well. The people part of our sport, the connections. The friends we make along the way are what make us look forward to heading to the races week after week. Like Ginny says, it's nice. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Rock and Ginny. Please be sure to tell your friends about the Class Racing Podcast, and we invite you to like this and post your comments about this podcast and what you'd like to hear in future episodes.